The first time it occurred to me that I could be anything less than 100% straight, I was 21. I was also in Spain, halfway into a semester abroad in Madrid, and I was not having a very good time. There were 100 students in my program. Most were American, from the East Coast, though there was also a not insignificant contingent from Cuba and the Dominican Republic. On the flight over, I'd entertained the vague possibility that I might finally find a boyfriend among the students I'd meet and have one of those whirlwind study abroad romances my friends kept having. Then I got there and looked around the auditorium where we first gathered and counted exactly 7 men, total, 2 of whom I later learned were gay. Well, at least 2. A third was considered a very likely suspect, but nobody knew for sure. And then, within 3 days of touching down on foreign soil, the cutest of the 5 or 4 straight guys there found the girl who looked most like a sorority president, and she dumped her boyfriend back home, and the 2 of them commenced their whirlwind study abroad romance, whose tumultuous nature would provide a kind of comforting, real-world-esque entertainment for the rest of us. Seeing as the demographics really allowed for only 1 heterosexual, high-drama, study-abroad relationship, I immediately admitted defeat and settled instead on finding lifelong best friends. That mission didn't go much better. The closest I came was a trio of Penn State students who'd arrived in Madrid as a fully formed clique. I could rope them into a night out or, my preference, a daytime historical site visit once in a while. But they were wealthier than me and much bigger partiers than I was. Not hard to be. And kind of bitchy. And I say that with the utmost admiration. I love mean people. It feels so good when a mean person likes you. It's like, I guess I am extremely cool. I basked in that glow for as long as they tolerated my momish friend hurting, which was maybe about a month. My friendlessness, coupled with my inability to afford travel outside the country or eat out very much, meant I had a lot of time to myself. On weekend days, I'd force myself into modest, repetitive adventure. I'd take a bus to Puerto del Sol to buy myself a cream Neapolitan at La Mallorquina, and then window shop and walk through Plaza Mayor. I'd make yet another trip to the Prado and visit my favorite paintings and write depressing journal entries. I have never been very good at open-ended exploring, and back then I was even worse. If I must do it, I need at least 1 fixed destination, usually involving food, and once there, I can wander within a small, neat circumference of that spot. Before going anywhere alone, I triple-check my routes, and usually I overestimate how long it will take me to get there. It isn't quite getting lost that I fear so much as it is the associated embarrassment. Looking lost, or looking somehow out of place. Looking alone. My guilt wouldn't allow me to wallow in my host's apartment all day every weekend, but it did not mind if I did so most weeknights after school. In the afternoons, at the end of my half-hour, humid, and mostly uphill walk home from the university, I would stop at the shop across the street to buy a Diet Coke and a little bag full of gummy candy, and then I'd head upstairs for the night. There I'd eat the late lunch my generous, if curmudgeonly, senora made daily for my roommate and me, though because my roommate had a life, I often ate for us both. And then, with 3 or 4 hours left before I could reasonably go to bed, I would watch TV. There was no Netflix streaming at that time, so I illegally and painstakingly downloaded everything I watched, 1 episode at a time. There was also no Wi-Fi, so in order to do this, I had to plug my laptop into the modem by an Ethernet cord I stretched across the tiny living room to the dining room table, where I sat to watch shows until my señora came home. She'd walk in around 6 each evening and, finding me sitting there, say, "Ya estás. You're still here." Sometimes, I'd wait a while before my retreat and we'd watch TV separately, together. Me at the table, watching on my laptop with headphones on, eating gummies. Her on the couch, watching talk shows on her 32-inch screen, eating a bowl of potato chips. Sometimes I'd head right for my room, my loneliness making that kind of extended, quiet indifference to each other feel intolerable. If I opened each episode of a show in its own tab and it finished downloading all the way before I disconnected, I could watch it atop the scratchy IKEA comforter in my room. If it didn't finish, or an episode froze up 5 minutes in, which happened a lot, I was devastated. Then I'd have to read, or worse, write more depressing journal entries. First, I worked my way through The Office, starting again from the beginning. Then I rewatched the better seasons of Sex and the City, 2 through 4. Then I felt like watching something I hadn't already seen. Ideally, something with more than 4 seasons, so I knew it might last me a significant portion of my remaining time in Madrid. Nothing soothes me like a long-term goal. And with no social life of my own to speak of, I knew I wanted something with lots of relationships and friendships and drama. Beyond these criteria, I don't remember exactly how it was that I arrived at the L word. All I know is that as soon as I started the pilot, I was hooked.